Thank you, Liz. Okay, so we are on the second week of Advent, and we know that Advent comes from the Latin word for arrival. Now, this Advent season, we are going through the Advent candles to prepare ourselves, not just to celebrate the arrival of Jesus on Christmas the first time, but preparing ourselves for the second arrival. Last week, we looked at the Hope candle. We did a fly over the book of Ecclesiastes, as it's a book where the author has some big questions about the world. He feels like he is lacking hope, or something to hope in. And we saw that the world is broken. So the hope that we have in Christmas is that the problems of this world are going to be fixed. Now this week, it's often called the preparation or the waiting candle, and is often called the peace candle. Now, I have to admit that when I started to decide to focus on Advent as a theme for these sermons, I thought that there would this big, long, established tradition that I could pull themes and outlines from. But it turns out that the Advent wreath is not actually all that old. I thought it would be way back in the church tradition. But it's not that old, and they often change what the candles are. So you may notice that the second candle there says love, even though I'm calling it peace. And it's also called the preparation or waiting candle. And sometimes the candles, they go with a theme from the Christmas story. So the first one might be prophecy, and then they have the Bethlehem candle and the angel's candle and so on. So I've decided to go with the themes of it this year. And because it's a fairly new thing, we can kind of choose our own adventure in it. Now, the exciting thing is, though, that it is a tradition, and it started in Germany in the 1830s with the Advent wreath. There was a Protestant pastor who would pass a mission school where all the poor children would be, and as it came closer to December and Christmas, the kids would come out every day and say, "Is it Christmas yet? Has Christmas arrived?" And he would have to tell them the date. So one year, he took out a big wagon wheel and he put on it 24 candles, 20 small red candles and 4 large white ones. And each day, he would light a candle so that the children would know how long it would be till Christmas. And the 4 large white candles he would light on each Sunday. So people liked this idea, and then when they took it into their homes, having 24 candles on display was a bit extreme. So they just went with the 4 white candles for each Sunday. And then someone added a candle in the middle for Christmas Day as the Jesus candle. So now it was mostly a German thing, and it didn't actually make it to America until the 1930s. So we can kind of do what we want with it, make it our own Christmas tradition, and we'll be respecting what has gone before. Now, last week we looked at hope and we saw that we're in a world that hopes for things to be made right. And God will do that through Jesus. Today we're looking at the preparation or the peace candle as we prepare for the peace of God. Now, to prepare or wait, we need to know what it is that we are waiting for. Now, one of the Old Testament prophets who gave us perhaps the best idea of what God would do through Jesus is Isaiah. Now, everyone is usually familiar with Isaiah 53. Now, that's the passage which gives us a vivid portrayal of Jesus' sacrifice that's written 700 years or more before he actually made it. But the book of Isaiah is actually far more interesting, detailed, and wondrous than that single chapter. It's written at a time when the people of Israel are in a terrible situation. They're under threat by the nations that surround them. They're sometimes waging war and they're living in fear. They're also waging a kind of war with God. They are God's people, chosen to be something different than the rest of the world, chosen to be the way that humanity was always supposed to be. But they're using their privileged position to take God for granted. They take advantage of the poor. They offer a hollow worship to God as if they are following him with their lives when they are really not. So not only are they at war with their neighbours, but they are destroying their relationship with God who has chosen them and is the one protecting them. Now, as Isaiah prophesies, He tells them of a future where things will be made right. And there are two figures that emerge from the prophecies. There is the Messiah, who is a powerful king who will bring peace between them and the nations. And there is the servant, who will bring peace between them and God. Now, again, this week we're going to take a very large and complicated book and choose a couple of elements from it that suit our Christmas story. But it is really a big, exciting and intricate book that I recommend you study on your own. Or if you are keen for me to do something more, we may do a sermon series on it in the future. I have had one request, so if more voices are added, I can add that to the agenda for 2021 or maybe more realistically 2022. So let me know. Now, the Israelites, we know that they do not have peace. And the first barrier to peace is their animosity with each other and with their neighbours. Now, we have the benefit of living in a country that has an unprecedented level of peace with the rest of the world. I have lived for 34 years and there has been no war that has directly threatened me or my life. There have been wars, but they've all been in other countries, and as far as I'm concerned, they make for interesting movies and video games, but the reality has never actually hit me. It's never been something that I have directly had to deal with. But I would not say that I always experience peace. War is one extreme way that people go about trying to solve their problems. But now we have these more subtle culture wars. One of the things that people speak about a lot these days is a rise of tribalism. And we talk about cancel culture and things like that. The wars and unrest that we experience are real, but the weapons are different. Now, this, of course, does not diminish the reality of those who are experiencing very horrible physical wars, but it's perhaps a precursor to that idea. We're seeing a rise in angry, bitter fights over opposing values. And you'll see people that have their tribes, and if they speak out against one of the official stances of their tribe, they're suddenly lumped in with the other tribe and then considered the enemy. Now, this became very obvious in the American election and everything leading up to it. But I also read an opinion piece by an Australian recently who said something about the bushfires. And then a bunch of people said, ah, no, that's a point of view that belongs to that side. So you must be against this and this and this, and you must be a horrible person. And he got attacked online for issues he'd never spoken about. Now, a big example of this was the actor Chris Pratt in the lead up to the American election. Chris Pratt is a comedic actor with some sort of a Christian faith. He goes to Hillsong in California. And he was part of a group of handsome, famous Hollywood actors named Chris. Now, one day someone on Twitter was just playing a fun little game and they said, if you had to choose one Chris to keep and one to get rid of, who would it be? And there was an overwhelming cry against Chris Pratt, not because of his acting or his comedic skills, but because he did not take part in a fundraiser supporting Joe Biden like one of the other Chris's did. So he was obviously a Trump supporter and a bad person and liked to kick puppies. So from there, all his friends came out and said that he was a good person, he's just not very political. And for a while on Twitter, there was this onslaught of accusations and fighting against him that all these people made from assumptions that he never actually expressed or said anything about. There was a similar thing happening in our country when the marriage plebiscite came out and was happening, and Cooper's Brewery were associated with a video that it discussed views for and against gay marriage and considered them both equal. And then that caused an uproar against Cooper's Brewery and they were boycotted from pubs in Melbourne. And the video, they didn't actually produce. They were just associated with the people who were producing it. And it caused uproar and strife. We don't always have physical fighting, but there is cultural wars and unrest going on. But I was thinking, I am okay with fighting a war, There's this certain feeling of righteous anger that I get inside me that makes me want to tear down those who practice injustice in my presence, those who would dare be wrong when I am right. I would fight for truth and I would fight for justice. I read about the things that go on and the injustices done against people like Chris Pratt, who just gets attacked for no reason, and I want to rebel and I want to tear down those who are doing that unjust and nonsensical thing. But I look at the tribes that are out there for me to join and I find it really tricky to choose one. I usually agree with one of the things that they stand for, but not all. And then I find that I agree with some that those stand for, but not others. I find that I'm probably morally conservative, but politically progressive, which means that I don't line up with any party. I am also very open to changing my mind, so if you provide me with a good argument and evidence, I'm happy to join your tribe, if I agree with everything. But apparently, being open-minded is not what you're allowed to do to join a tribe. Now, I know that a mix of ideologies and principles surrounding more or less governing is all mixed up in the odds, and it means that I'm often at odds with all the parties, and I can't choose any wholeheartedly. If you disagree with me on that, please have a conversation with me to change my mind. But increasingly, we're seeing that you already need to be in a tribe and have your set opinion. Now, with this way of the world, is there ever any going to be a chance of peace? Is it all going to end? But even more than that, I often experience a lack of peace in my own little world, my own life. My wife and I don't agree on everything. My children and I certainly don't agree on everything. Sometimes we agree on the choice of TV show, but it's not as often as it used to be. And we certainly don't agree on things like now is the time that you need to brush your teeth and get ready for church. Is there ever going to be a solution to the constant tensions and fights that we have throughout all aspects of our lives? Well, that is where the Messiah in Isaiah comes in. The Messiah is supposed to have the Spirit of God upon him. He's going to be perfectly just. Isaiah says that he will not judge with his eyes or his ears, but will judge with righteousness. He'll bring perfect justice. He'll bring justice to the poor, and he will strike down those who do evil and rid it once and for all from the earth. And then there'll be peace. It'll be so peaceful that even animals are going to be at peace. Isaiah says that the lion will lay down with the lamb and the young child will put his hand in his viper's nest. And I'm sure Isaiah would have also thought that a pastor could preach with a huntsman on the end of his pulpit and be okay. I don't really know what that world would be like, but I toured once with a New Zealander, and in New Zealand there are no dangerous spiders or snakes. So we'd go to a wood or a forest, or I think we were in New Zealand at the time, and there would be a hollow in a tree, and she'd just stick her hand in there. And there's part of me that just writhed in fear when she just stuck her hand in the hollow of a tree without any kind of fear. Because there's part of me that goes, no, you don't stick your hand in something like that, because there's a snake or a spider or a crocodile in there, and you'd be dead. But that's not the problem in New Zealand. So she just had this absolute peace about something like that. I was like, that's kind of what the world with the Messiah ruling would be like. We wouldn't have to worry walking down the street at night. A world at peace. You didn't have to watch everything you say thinking that someone was going to attack you for it. Perfect peace, absolute security. So the solution to all the turmoil that we experience in this world, all of the needless tribalism, the shouting down of those who we disagree with, is to have a good king who follows God and enacts his justice. So our hope for Christmas is this peaceful king, the one who will put an end to all of the squabbles and the fighting, and he is going to come. There is still a problem, though, however. It's that we would still be in that kingdom. Now, I'm very much sure that my opinion is right and the world would be a better place if everyone just did what I said. But the reality is that I add to the problems of the world. I'm often part of the problem. I'm selfish. I like to make people think that I'm better than I actually am. I like to fuel the anguish and the fighting if it means that I can be the one who enacts my righteous anger. I want to rule myself and be the ruler of myself, and that inevitably makes me the cause of unrest with others around me, other people who want to be their own rulers, and it puts me at war with God. Now, this leads us to the second character in Isaiah, and that is the servant. Now, the servant has four songs in the book. He is a cryptic character, and he is someone who has been anointed by God to teach and guide Israel. And the last servant song that we get is Isaiah 53, where it describes the servant being persecuted, attacked, tortured, and even killed, though he has done nothing wrong. The interesting thing about it, though, it says that he was pierced for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities. By his wounds, we are healed. It says that we're all like sheep who have gone astray. Every person has turned to their own way. But God laid on the servant the iniquity of us all. He received the punishment for the wrong things that we have done. And it goes on to say, out of the anguish of his soul, he shall see and be satisfied. By his knowledge shall the righteous one, my servant, make many to be accounted righteous, and he shall bear their iniquities. So through the sacrifice of the servant, all the wrong that people do was paid for so that they could be made righteous. The problem of our war with God is solved through the character of the servant. All the things that would make it impossible for us to follow the lead of a perfect Messiah in a perfect kingdom has been paid for by the servant. So in these two prophesied characters, we have the solution to the problems of the unrest and the animosity that's always been a barrier to peace on earth. We will have peace with each other because we will have a wise and peaceful leader. And we will have peace with God because our wrongdoing will be paid for and we will be made righteous. So then, who are these two people and when can we expect them? Well, there's actually a fifth maybe servant song in Isaiah 61. Now, it's a little song where it sounds like all the language that describes the servant and the sort of language that describes the Messiah are both used in this one little song together. It doesn't use the word servant or Messiah. And I think that it's Isaiah's crafty way of showing us that they're actually the same person. So who is this person? Well, in the Gospel of Luke, as Jesus is starting his ministry, he comes to the synagogue in Nazareth and he went to teach them there. And the scroll that week just so happens to be open to Isaiah 61. So he reads this servant Messiah song and says, today this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing. Jesus is telling them that he is the servant Messiah come to bring justice and peace amongst the people and peace with God. Now, we know how the story progresses, and Jesus' ministry to us looks a lot more like the servants than the Messiah's. Now, this should make us excited as we now have the possibility of peace with God. And so peace on earth may now be in our reach. And if I think about it, the way that I want it to go, though, is for the Messiah to come and make everything perfect, and then I can work on myself, and then I could be perfect maybe in the perfect kingdom. But it doesn't actually make sense that way, because if I haven't fixed myself up first, I'll just bring my baggage, my corrupt desire to rule the way that I want, into the new kingdom and make it all messy again. I'll walk on the clean floor with dirty feet. So where does this leave us? Well, we're excited that Christmas celebrates the time when Jesus was the servant and saved us from our wrongdoing. And now we await the day when he comes as the Messiah to bring ultimate peace. But what does this mean for my Christmas this year? Well, I remember talking to an older lady once who she had grown up during World War II in Australia. And she was telling me what it was like then, and she said that it was wonderful. Everyone was working together, looking out for one another, and there was this incredible sense of unity and togetherness and purpose. And she even said to me that maybe we need another war like that. Now, I don't think she meant all the killing and death and all that sort of stuff. I'm certain she didn't mean that. But she longed for a time when everyone had a united purpose and cause to be living for. Well, that is when we think about the Messiah and the kingdom he is bringing. We've had step one done, and now we can start to act like people of the kingdom. When there is something bigger for us to fight for, all of those other little issues seem like background noise, so we can focus on the real big things. So this Christmas, we can remember that the peace of Christmas is achieved by our servant Messiah. We know that we can now have peace with God if we trust him. We know that he is bringing this amazing, peaceful and just kingdom where all the wickedness is gone, and it is so peaceful that the lion lays down next to the lamb. Children will play without fear of others or snakes or spiders hiding in holes in the ground or on pulpits. This Christmas, let us hope in the peace of our servant Messiah. And let that vision cast away all of the petty squabbles that try to build up our own sense of righteousness alone. Instead, let us build up the kingdom that God has for us. Let us pray.